One of the most polarizing things you can call someone with a disability is inspirational. People either love it or hate it. My name is Nate. I'm a wheelchair user, and I call my show We're the Inspiration, featuring real stories about people with disabilities and some of the people closest to them. These stories are not designed to inspire, just to entertain. I enjoy getting new people on the show sometimes because they tell me about something I know nothing about. That's going to be the case this time, because I have with me a wheelchair Zumba instructor. We'll get to that, but first of all, Tennille Houston, thank you for being the inspiration for this episode.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. I'm a little nervous, of course, but...
Well, we've been talking about the fact that you've been nervous to do this for a while, because this was initially supposed to happen a while ago, but you've been traveling, you've been sick, and...
Yep.
Yeah. These things happen, but you're all better now, and we're doing it right now. In fact, we're doing this the morning that you contacted me again after all that stuff happened. That's the way it goes sometimes. So first of all, the person that recommended that I talk to you, one of the things that she, Mizan, told me about you was that you acquired your disability in an accident.
Kind of. Yes. Would you like me to explain it a little more?
Yeah. Usually, especially if I don't know the person, the first thing we talk about is the disability if they have one. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So mine happened through pregnancy. I've had three babies. And with my first two, it was kind of hard to walk and I need to rest a lot. But with my third baby, I started limping when I was only a couple months pregnant. And by about 4 or 5 months pregnant, I was in a wheelchair all the time just to keep working and make it through the day. And it got worse and worse until I had my baby. And all along, the doctor's like, so the problem is the pelvis. Usually your pelvis is supposed to be, you know, nice and like together. And then when you're pregnant, it loosens so you can have your baby. But for me, it like went way overboard. And I had my baby 13 years ago. So... I have not recovered from this one. And despite trying many, many, many things, I still use a wheelchair all the time.
It sounds like what you're saying is that pelvic injury affected your legs to the point where you couldn't walk anymore?
Yes.
Okay.
Because the pelvis is a center, sitting, walking, all of that uses your pelvis to move. And so, yeah, that's where all the pressure was. I think there's some damage to the lower spinal cord, like the lumbar sacral region. I mean, I can see in MRIs, there's some bone deterioration. And I think that's where it was rubbing together when I was walking.
So after 13 years, are you still hoping there's going to be some chance you'll walk again or no?
So it's kind of a funny question. Not a funny question from you, but a funny like mental thing for me. So I can walk a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's like I have a limited amount of movement per day. And so I decide how I'm going to use that. To get better, I have to feel like it's possible. So that's the mental, emotional part. Like, okay, I believe I can because I can physically walk a little bit. It makes sense. I should get better. But the only way, like I had to along the years adapt to what if I don't, right? I had to start making some adaptions and find like a community where I belonged because I felt like I didn't belong with full-time wheelchair users because I could walk, but I also wasn't very functional in my day-to-day life. Without a wheelchair, I would just have to stay in my room all the time, I think. I wouldn't be able to do stuff.
It's always interesting for me to talk to people with that sort of perspective. Like they're sort of newer to disability and they don't necessarily feel like they fit into the community. And I don't know if everybody feels like this or not, but I always feel like you can fit in as long as you know enough about it. I know people that have fit into the community, not by having a disability, but like teaching people with disabilities. And for instance, I was involved in adapted sports for a very long time and mostly coached by people that didn't have disabilities. Some knew more than I did, some actually didn't. So in some cases, we learned together. But even for the people that didn't really know how to fit in, it's one of those things, again, where we kind of learn together.
Yeah.
And they fit in that way. But again, it's been 13 years for you. So do you think you fit in by now or no?
I do. I feel like, all right, so here's what happened. I read this book called Sitting Pretty.
Okay.
By Rebecca Taussig. And I think it was about 2-3 years ago. And she, how she talked about it, like she said, I loved like in the beginning, she's like, I don't represent all disabilities. She's like, this is my story. And for some reason, I had this thing in my mind, you're in a wheelchair because you're paralyzed, or you're not. Or if I'm in my wheelchair, which I am, it's like, okay, don't twitch your toes, don't move your feet, or they're going to think you're, you know, like I had this idea that everyone's going to look at me and think I'm faking. That's the part, that was the whole mental thing that got me in trouble, was feeling like people are going to think I'm faking it. Finally, like after reading that book and something changed emotionally and I started like finding, so I live in a really small town. I haven't seen someone like me using a wheelchair, but still like, I don't know what I thought things were like for people with disabilities, but in my head, I thought I was alone. But then I started looking like on Instagram and following people with disabilities. I'm like, oh my goodness, I fit right in. Like this whole world of people who have a variety of reasons for having a disability, or they use wheelchairs sometimes, or they walk with a cane sometimes, or maybe they walk a little bit. There's a lot out there that I did not know.
One of the things that I've discovered, especially since starting this podcast, because I've sort of actively forced myself to pay attention to other people with disabilities, right? One of the things I've noticed is that a lot of what you're describing as far as being judged for maybe not having enough of a disability comes from outside the community. It's not the people with other disabilities that are going to judge you just for being a part-time wheelchair user or however you describe yourself there, but it's from people that, for instance, I hear a lot of stories like this, you know, a part-time wheelchair user or somebody that has some mobility problem, but it's not severe, will use a handicapped parking space. They'll get called out for that by somebody that doesn't need it at all. So it's that type of thing where you're judged by people that, again, know nothing about disability, and it's really bizarre.
That is where it's coming from, or how I thought I saw things. And now, like, there's so much nuance. There's so many things we don't know. You can't see. Like, I think I can walk a little bit and someone might judge me and be like, why do you need that spot? And I'm like, well, because I can walk a little bit, you know? Well, I mean, I guess I'm trying to say is you don't know what's going on inside a person just by looking at them.
This may be a loaded question, but, you know, obviously we're going to talk about wheelchair Zumba in a bit, but given the fact that you had part of your life where you didn't have a disability, and then, you know, you had your third child and that sort of manifested in mobility issues. Again, loaded question, but what were you doing before your third child? And then how did you go from that part of your life to having the mobility problems and then finally deciding, oh, okay, this is what I should be doing, the wheelchair Zumba and teaching it?
I have always liked fitness. My profession is a dietitian.
Okay.
And I have loved nutrition and fitness since I started 4-H, like 10 or 11. Like that was my focus of study. I wanted to learn about nutrition and how to be healthy is really what I wanted. I enjoy the music. I enjoy the camaraderie. I feel like going to fitness classes like brought this extra amount of energy to me, to my soul, that like made me feel happy and feeling strong. I really liked that.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually became a certified group fitness instructor and taught group fitness classes on the side. Like I would be a dietitian, work at the hospital and do my classes around that schedule. And I was actually teaching, I don't know if you're familiar with step aerobics.
In the fact that I've heard of it, yes.
So it's where you have these steps and like part of the routine is stepping up, stepping off, stepping up.
Keep in mind, you're talking to a wheelchair user right now, full time. So.
Oh my goodness, that was terrible. Maybe you should cut that
part. No, it was perfect.
So I was teaching those classes when the pelvis injury happened.
Okay.
So I wonder if that aggravated any pre-existing condition problem with my pelvis, that step up, step down part.
Not to interrupt you, but were you doing the same kind of thing when your first two kids were born or no?
I was doing fitness, but not the step.
Okay.
I used to really thrive on the fitness. I love that. I always struggled with my weight. So I'm not like one of like a little super athletic looking person. But okay. I enjoyed the fitness part. I enjoyed pushing myself and meeting goals. I did not look like someone who is like loves that industry.
Plus you have three kids and.
Yeah. So as far as like a change, it was really difficult because in the past, if I wanted to lose weight, I would work out harder. I felt like I had control, like, okay, I can change my diet and work out harder. And in this condition, it was like an emotional point of pain. So not only could I not like physically do what I felt like I needed to do, take care of the house and the babies and run and, you know, go to the park, I could do those things. But it was like an emotional, pain where I couldn't just go exercise hard like I wanted to. Because I also had physiotherapists working with me and they're like, the problem is stability and we're working on all these things. And so they advised me not to do Zumba because there's so much strain on the core, right? Because you're moving and stuff. You're not stable.
And you already had the pelvic injury.
Yes.
Okay.
But it also like led to more depression for me because then I felt like, I don't know, it was a source of happiness for me to be able to work out. Just that endorphin release of being able to work out. And I felt like there was nothing I could do hardcore. Any movements I did, it's like my arms would get tired before I felt like I had a workout.
I've always been a wheelchair user. So I can't speak to like having some sort of injury and then becoming one, but I can speak to the fact that because of surgery, I once was able to move my legs and now I can't. So from that perspective, I understand it where like I was very active in my youth. And then when I was like 17, I had that surgery. It was a hip flexor surgery that did nerve damage and all that stuff. So what I had to do before I started exercising again, first of all, I had to wait for a doctor to clear me, but I understand the idea of having to wait until you don't feel a certain level of pain anymore. That was me for a number of years. And I mean, I'm 43 now, so I'm well past, you know, my teens and everything when I was very much in shape, but I am just getting to the point now where I feel like, you know, I'm exercising to the level I feel like I can and actually have it pay off. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
It's never too late.
No.
Yeah.
Also the length of time. Because as far as like the before and after, it's like I would think an hour, like an hour is a workout. Anything
Sure.
less doesn't count. But what I found out is sometimes 5 minutes, it counts. It all counts. You know, I can't go from like 0 to an hour. Like that's just not possible.
Right.
So I now see it as, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15. It all counts.
Sure. I mean, there are so many people in the world, but probably this country especially, where they are completely sedentary. And a lot of those people don't have disabilities. I'm not saying there aren't different perspectives on that, but this is one of the reasons that I call my show what I call it. And I never talked about this aspect of it. There are so many people that don't have disabilities that live that sort of lifestyle, and they see active people in wheelchairs and they're like, oh, okay, this is why I don't have an excuse.
Right? Yeah. I remember you saying there's a loaded question and there's a bit of before and after. Oh, and then what led me to the wheelchair Zumba part? Okay, so I loved the fitness, and after a few years of trying to recover, doing the physical therapy, like trying to like check mark the box, like okay, I tried this. Saw a doctor, doctor, doctor. After a few years, it was sort of a okay, this isn't like a short-term problem, right? Like when you're sick, you have the flu, you're like, okay, I gotta take it easy, I will get better and then move on.
But then you know what to do.
Yeah. And then after a few years, it's like, okay, I gotta find a way to still have my life and do things, and I have the disability. Like it's not going away. I gotta figure out how to live in this world in a happy way that, you know, feels fulfilling. And I called up a group fitness instructor at the YMCA or the Gold's Gym or YMCA. I can't remember. And I knew as an instructor, like if I rolled in there in my wheelchair, like I didn't want to scare the instructor, right? I didn't want to be like, I
I
don't
might
know.
have wanted to if it were me. Because...
I do not like the spotlight. I mean, you'd think, you know, I do Zumba videos on YouTube, but I really am like.
Before you go on, let me tell you a quick story. When I was fresh out of college, I put my resume on monster.com, which I don't even know exists anymore or not, but my father convinced me to do that. And the first job offer I got, only one, I think, was, if I remember correctly, to drive cars from airports back to the rental car places. First of all, I was like, okay, what does that have to do with radio? But second of all, in order to drive, I need hand controls, right? So, and that's something that I may go into detail about one day on the show. I don't know. But everybody I told that story to when it happened said the same thing. I should have accepted the job and then shown up and have them realize, okay, how are we going to have this person drive?
Right?
Yeah.
That
But
would be
that
a
was just related to what you said about showing up, you know, and
yeah.
not alerting to them the fact that you were in a wheelchair. But
And they'd be shocked and try not to be shocked. And
See, I would do it and you probably wouldn't, but you
no.
know.
No. So I called her and warned her, and I asked in my little Tennille voice, like, hey, I really want to try this Zumba thing. I want to exercise. I'm in a wheelchair. We talked probably a half an hour. She didn't even know who I was. And she's like, actually, I just came back from a convention. There were wheelchair users there. And I don't know, she just built me up. So I rolled into class and I parked myself in the corner. Like there's no windows. I parked myself like next to the weights and all the fitness stuff. And she was like, oh, no, Tennille. Somehow between her and I got scooted in front of the mirror. And it was hard. I don't know. It was just different. You know, I'm used to like the other way. And now it was like I'm seeing myself. I just remember that experience and I, to this day, love that instructor just because she took the time to not make me feel weird. She didn't make me feel like I'm special. She didn't make me feel like I'm weird. She just made me feel like, yeah, come exercise with us. So I fell in love with that instructor. I had a whole lot of accessibility issues. I think your listeners might cringe, but they were upstairs, the classes. So my friends would carry me up the stairs. So that,
that was going to be my first question. How did you get up the stairs? Yeah.
It was horrible. Horrible.
Okay. It might make certain people that are listening cringe, but yeah, that's the kind of story I want on this podcast. Not because they're going to cringe, but because it's going to make the people that are not cringing actually think.
Okay. So yeah, two of my friends, they do the little, I don't know if it's called fireman carry, where they loop their hands, and I sat, they carried me up, and then another person would bring up my wheelchair.
Fireman's carry, I think, is over the shoulders.
Oh, it is?
I think so, yeah.
One guy did do that to me, like maybe two times. He was this super massive, huge guy, and I'd asked him for help up the stairs, and he just like threw me over, and I'm like,
there's at least one of those at every gym, let's face it.
Yes. That was stressful. That was a very stressful part.
How often were you doing that, though?
3 days a week.
Oh, man. That's the stressful part, right?
One of the bathrooms, I had to take off a wheelchair leg to get through the bathroom door.
Yikes.
And this is the YMCA. I asked the manager, I said, hey, could you get an elevator in here? And he literally said it would cost too much money and that's not a good use of our money or something, because it's just me, or they're not, just me wants it or something. That was my impression. So if I'm saying it wrong, I apologize to that person, but I still don't like him.
It wouldn't surprise me if that were the case, because I had an experience where for a long time, I was going to a gym where things were perfectly accessible. And then all of a sudden they moved everything. So like all the free weights were upstairs and they didn't have a real elevator. And when I say that, they had what they call a lift, where you hold on to the button and it, you know, it'll slowly go up. And more than once, this lift broke on me.
Oh.
And one time I was in there for 2.5 hours. The fire department had to be called. When they moved the free weights and things I was using upstairs, what upset me about it the most was they put in like a dozen big screen TVs in that area upstairs, and they couldn't spring for a real elevator.
Yes. This money is flashy, shows everyone things, or the elevator. Yeah. That's frustrating.
Mm-hmm. I keep interrupting you. I don't mean to. But
no, it's fine. So the weird thing about it, that YMCA, maybe it was a year after that, I don't know my time frame, but they got shut down for embezzling money. And I was so...
Why are we not surprised?
Angry. So angry. I'm like, you embezzled hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I guess it's the same mind frame that will steal is also the same mind frame that doesn't want to spend it on someone else. So,
right.
Anyways, they are no more. So then I went to another gym, but it was still, the exercise classes were upstairs and I would get carried up there, and I started gaining weight, not on purpose, but you know, over time it got to be like people didn't want to carry me anymore and it was embarrassing.
Mm.
I think I went to another gym, but it just wasn't the same. You know how like each gym has their own, I don't know. This gym, like the Zumba classes were like two people. So there's not that big like environment of
energy.
Then the pandemic hit, and then I started looking up YouTube videos to watch, to do on my own. And I'm doing them. And one thing about me specifically, maybe other people, but as a wheelchair user, I'm watching able, I don't know if that's the right word, able-bodied, like their fitness instructors looking like,
I don't know if that's the right word either, but it's one I use. So
okay. So someone who didn't look like they have any physical disabilities, you know, they're doing their videos. But
that's a longer way to say it, but go on.
For me, it was like, it takes time. Like I'd have to do the same video many times to get the moves. and adapt my own moves to get a workout. So I could work out for an hour and barely get my heart rate up. Or like I got my little, my fitness watch and it's like, I can't get my heart rate over into any like fitness level. I know I was doing good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually I started doing my own and I'm like, well, this is way more fun. Cause I know I got a better workout because I'm always 100% of the time working. I'm doing, you know, arm movements. And I realized my workout was more effective for me because it was already adapted. I didn't have to do the thinking and adapting after I'd figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I apologize if someone out there is already doing Zumba amazingly in a wheelchair, but when I was searching, people like would do chair exercises and they do their legs, but I'm like, my legs, I can't do that. I can't move my legs like that.
Sure.
So it was again, able-bodied people sitting in a chair, maybe with disabled people around them, which, you know, like that's fine, but it wasn't like I wanted that big, loud dance techno sound for Tennille to really have a great time. Like I wanted that big, bold pit bull stuff, you know?
While we were sort of going back and forth trying to put this together, I started looking at your videos, you know, on TikTok and on Instagram, whatever. And it didn't really help me as far as knowing what to ask you because you didn't say much in most of them, right? You were just moving. But I could still tell that you had this energy, and we used that word before, but this energy of like, you know, very positive and like not so much that it's sort of really in your face and annoying, you know, but just enough energy to make me believe, okay, this woman can get some people moving. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
On YouTube, I have full-length videos.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do like the whole song. TikTok, I'm working on. I put effort and then I take it away as I get nervous. Instagram, I'm feeling better about it. But again, I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I don't take a lot of pictures or anything. So I don't use Instagram very much. I tried YouTube and I have some videos on there, but like, they're so short that I felt like maybe they were better suited for TikTok, which turned out to be true, but I wish I'd just gone with TikTok when I started the podcast. I'm just sort of doing short form videos about disability there now. If I had started doing that at the time I started this, I'd probably have a bigger audience listening to this. I'm not a big social media guy to begin with, which I struggle with it just because of this show. Like I want to be able to promote it well, but other than that, I couldn't care less about social media. So,
yeah, it is funny, but promoting this Zumba videos, that's what's really got me into social media. Cause before that it was like, you know, show pictures of the kids, you know, and then my kids think I'm funny. I think they cringe. Their mom talking about TikTok, you know?
Yeah. I can understand actually both sides of that. I mean, I really think unless you're of a certain age, like more your kids' age, social media in general is sort of useless unless you have something to promote. I used it for years, or I had it for years and didn't really use it much, except maybe Facebook because I know a lot of people on there, but even that's kind of dwindling because a lot of people are getting rid of it. But then I started this show and I'm like, okay, how do I sort of promote it efficiently? And a lot of my friends are like, okay, I know you hate it, but you got to go back to social media.
Yes. You got to follow comedians, Nate. That would be better.
I do follow some comedians. But again, we're getting sidetracked. I don't know where we left off. As for, oh, what we didn't define yet, because unlike you, I'm not really into the dancing world. Tell me what Zumba is and how it sort of differs when you do it from a wheelchair.
That's a very good question. So Zumba itself came about, it's only, I think it's 20 years old now. So it hasn't been around a really long time. Basically, like, in the 90s, there was a lot of, we would call it aerobics, right? High aerobics, low aerobics. I believe Zumba has taken that spot, but don't quote me on that. As far as what Zumba is it is really like enjoying different dancing styles. And you will get a different Zumba experience depending on who you go to. So like me, I said, I like the loud dance, techno, electronic music stuff. But you might find someone else who has really more authentic Latin music, and it just feels like a different style. So basically, to restate Zumba, it's dancing in different styles. So it originated in, I believe, Miami or Cuba. The head guy, Beto, is from Cuba. And so it started with a lot of Latin mixes. So you've got the merengue, the reggaeton. It's starting to include more and more dance types. So like African music, Bhangra from India. We have some Brazil music. I really like the pop songs. For my style, it's going to include the Zumba music. So Zumba itself comes out with new songs every month. So they give us new choreographed music every single month. So it's always fresh. You know, you're not like just doing the same songs all the time. Mm-hmm. And then I will add the music I like. So, and it has to have a certain kind of flow to it, right? I wouldn't be able to do a Zumba song to, for me, like classical kind of flowy music. It has to have like hard beats. And then how does it differ in the wheelchair?
Yes.
So this part was really different because I had to think outside the box. So a lot of like the Zumba songs I was talking about, like say the styles will use a lot of hip work. Their hips are going, you know, like the little dance, the hips are moving back and forth. And then you go this way. A lot of like swirling the hips, maybe like think about hula hoop, right?
Your
hips.
And again, that's why it was recommended you not do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I did is adapt and do that with my arms. I thought, you know what? I could be frustrated and be like, I can't do this. Or I take the same rhythm and do it with my hands. So I do a lot of, instead of like moving hips, I kind of move my arms or upper body. But it does take some adapting.
It's interesting to me, and this is going back to something you said earlier, the idea of people in wheelchairs, their philosophies on whether they exercise based on something that already exists or like, you know, something specifically for people in wheelchairs. And
Right. The
way I exercise, I guess I tend to take something that already exists, sort of adapted a little bit, but with what you're doing, it sounds like more of a hybrid because, you know, obviously the dances are similar, but you're using different parts of yourself.
And so they come out with the choreography and I think I'm doing exactly like them. But if they saw me, they'd probably be like, that is way different.
We were talking earlier before we kind of went on a tangent. That's probably my fault, but that's okay. About the different gyms that you work for, but ultimately, do you do it on your own now?
Yeah, 100%. So with the pandemic, all the gyms shut down and I'm looking up YouTube videos. And then somewhere in there, I decided to start doing my own. I liked it so much, I didn't go back to the gym. Mm. I was all like, I love the energy part, but the thought of getting up the stairs or traveling now, I'm like, I love doing it right here in my own house. Like I don't have to travel.
Because right.
For me, I imagine for a lot of people, traveling is a big deal, right? Like you're getting in and out, the wheelchair in and out, all that is exhausting. So I feel like here in my living room, I can turn on the music and dance away, get my whole exercise time done without the added travel time.
Well, obviously, when you were working in the gyms, you were teaching classes, right?
Before the injury, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But not after.
Not after the injury, okay. But are you doing that now online, or is it just people watching your videos?
So it's a little bit of both. what I dream of doing is like having Zoom classes.
Okay.
Right. And I do offer Zoom classes Monday through Friday. I would like to see more and more people. Like, that is fun. Even energy of virtual people is still fun. Makes me feel that excited, alive feeling. And as far as the YouTube videos, is more to get the word out. And I also know, like, financially, people are all in different places.
Right.
I know for me, when I was doing my YouTube videos, like as just a person trying to exercise, you know, I would, you know, click around and find different people I really liked and follow that and not pay anything. And so I feel like I can offer that. It gets my word out, but it's also something people can use and not have to like financially. You could do it for free.
So where can people find your classes?
I call them live virtual classes because I'm counting Zoom as live because we can interact.
Sure.
Those classes are found on TennilleHouston@zumba.com.
I always end these things with new people, especially if they have disabilities, by asking the same thing.
Okay.
So going back to the beginning of the show, you know, I sort of explained why I call the show We Are the Inspiration. The fact that everybody seems to have a different viewpoint on people with disabilities being called things like inspirational. So, mm-hmm. you know, some people don't like it, and I tend to be one of the people that kind of don't like it, but some people are all about it. So where do you stand on something like that?
I'm glad you asked, because the name of your podcast, I think I've known about you for like a month now, and it just got me thinking, do I want to be called inspirational or no? So here's
success.
Where I stand on it. Success? Well, it worked.
I got you thinking about the exact right thing. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So I know that when I would go to the gym, many people would be like, when I see you, I feel like I have no excuse not to be here. And it was weird, this weird feeling, because I'm like, I don't feel inspirational. I feel like I'm just trying to get through every minute of the day, trying to figure out life, trying to get my butt to the gym. I don't feel inspirational. But then it's like, I don't know. I think part of it's how people say it, you know, if they're like, well, if you can be here, I have no excuse. But then I feel like I don't know what to say about that. You're right. You're able bodied. Get in here, you know? But I don't know. If it motivates them to get to the gym and get to classes, that can be for them. But it's never been my goal to be an inspiration. I don't want to be in a room and be like, here I am, everyone, you know, be inspired. I'd not like that.
Be just like me. No.
Be just like me. And I don't want to be mad at people either and be like, what's wrong with you? Why don't you get to the gym? I can do it. I don't want to be that person either.
Right.
So basically, well, with the Zumba, I hope to inspire people to see that there's a lot of ways to exercise.
Okay.
Because as a dietitian, helping people make changes, I've seen so many times where it's like, oh, I have a hurt knee, I can't exercise. Or I have a hurt elbow, I can't exercise. I have a hurt ankle. I want to encourage people to think outside of what their usual thought of exercise is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, like, I think if a hurt knee is stopping you from exercise, you're thinking like classes or walking, you know? So I want to be like, there's outside of the box, you know, what is possible?
If something hurts, there are definitely ways to get around it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And don't push through the pain. I don't want to encourage that.
No.
That's not good either.
No, definitely not. I'm sort of answering the question I asked you, but, you know, I think people's mileage obviously varies when it comes to thoughts on being called things like inspirational. But I also think it depends on the context of how people say it. And I think you touched on that a little bit. But I remember one time, I think all I did was make a self-deprecating joke, you know, which I do often if you get to know me. But for some reason, a friend of mine who I was working with at the time, he called me inspirational because of that. And he prefaced that by saying, I know you don't like it. This is probably 10 years ago or more. That was the first time I really started thinking about, okay, he's right. I don't like it, but why? And the truth is, I feel like if you call a person with a disability inspirational just because, and don't really have a reason behind it, it feels like what you're saying is, okay, when I met you, I had a really low expectation.
Yeah.
And you exceeded it without really doing anything. And that's why you're inspirational.
Yeah. Like, because I'm alive.
Right.
Yay.
I get a lot of examples. I used to ask for really weird stories, which I think you already sort of told about being called inspirational. And like, a lot of them turn out to be stories about people in wheelchairs going to the grocery store by themselves.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That annoys me to death. Like, I'm grocery shopping and this guy walks up to me like, do you mind if I ask you why you're in a wheelchair? And I have to practice my responses because initially I freeze. I'm like a freezer. Like, but when I think about it, I'm like, how rude. I was just picking out my cereal. Like,
right.
Leave me alone.
I didn't expect the interview today, right? About
yes.
Why I'm in a wheelchair. Well, you know, you kind of did now with the show, yeah. But
yeah,
that was a bad choice of words on my part. So,
you know, I didn't pick up on it. So I think you're fine. You know,
I'm calling myself out.
It's hard. It's hard to know the right things to say. I just know my feelings are, I don't want to be a thing. I don't want to be a spectacle. I just want to like.
You just want to live.
Live my life and get my groceries and not have you comment. Like I had one lady who's like, oh, I wish I could sit in a chair. And I'm like, oh, I wanted to punch her and I feel bad. But she looked at me like I had it easy because I was sitting in a chair and I don't know. Bless, I hope she's a happy person, but inside it really, I don't know, I still remember the look down at me like, I wish I could sit in a chair. And maybe she has some other thing. I don't know. I took it badly.
But. Sometimes I'll turn it around on other people. And, you know, this is just maybe a mean spirit that you don't really have. But I was in the gym yesterday and this guy was counting his reps like louder than anybody I'd ever heard.
Uh-huh.
And between sets, he was complaining about how much it hurt. And like, I just joke with him, like, you know, if you get to leg day, you're going to need my chair more than I do.
Yes.
It didn't annoy me or anything like that, but I know some people are like that. Again, you just sort of hope to get on with your day sometimes, yeah, and not have to be, I guess, a spectacle, like you said.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then, you know, I'll meet people and talk to them, and then I'm fine with sharing, you know?
Sure.
I think it's that initial, I'm curious, tell me what happened. Mm-hmm. Like that part.
It really is all about the approach.
Yes.
I mean,
100%.
Maybe if you're newer to disability, like, let's say you compared to me, I had a birth defect. I never walked. I have 43 years of disability. You have 13. Who's counting, right? But I think maybe for people that are newer to disability, they may be a little more sensitive to those questions.
Hmm.
I remember being a lot more sensitive to them when I was younger. I think by now, most of it sort of rolls off my back. Unless people are really rude about it, and then I want to slug them like you do. But
yeah, that makes sense, though.
But that doesn't happen often anymore. But I do think that it's easier to tell now who's really genuinely interested and who is being a lot more rude about it and maybe doesn't want to treat us like people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aren't you glad we're finally doing this?
I am. This- this is good. You make me think.
I like it too. You're a lot of fun. I'm going to have you back on the show.
Well, thank you, Nate.
Yeah.
Are you okay that I call you Nate?
Well, what should you call me instead?
I don't know. Maybe I'm being too friendly. I don't know.
Call me.
Sir.
I was about to say that, but and then I thought, people are going to get the wrong idea if I actually say that on the air.
Yeah.
But that was the only thing I could think of, like, did she expect me to want her to call me sir? Like,
I don't know where I was going.
I've done the show for almost 2 years, and still the majority of my guests are people I actually know.
Oh.
So, you know, that sort of formality is not really a thing for the most part.
Okay.
And I know it can be awkward to, like, be on a podcast for the first time and, you know, meet somebody this way, but, you know, that doesn't mean you have to approach it with any sort of formality, like calling me sir. Oh, God.
Thank you, sir. No, just kidding.
You're welcome, ma'am.
See, that doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't at all.
Nope.
All right. So you're Tennille. I'm Nate. And that's how we're going to.
So I should say my Instagram and YouTube and TikTok are all wheelchair fitness nutrition.
With dots in between, right?
With dots. Yep.
Wheelchair.fitness.nutrition.
Yeah.
And that's actually how I found you. So.
Okay.
Cool.
And then my website is called TennilleHouston@Zumba.com. So that's why I wanted to have that clarification there.
Thank you to Tennille for being the inspiration for this episode. Thanks to everybody else for listening. Remember, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. Links will be in the description. Until next time, this is Nate Lurie saying, you don't always have to do a lot to inspire others.